The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Tara for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Essence. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence.com. And our first article is called Ashley Etienne is Done Advising. Now she's the one to watch. The former political advisor for Vice President Kamala Harris is now a political contributor on the long-running political affairs show Meet the Press every Sunday morning. This article by Grace Barlow. Ashley Etienne has spent her career inside the most consequential rooms in American politics. Now she's seated at one of the most visible tables. The veteran communications strategist recently joined NBC News as a political contributor, making her debut on Meet the Press with Kristen Welker, and marking the first time in the show's history that two black women have held central roles on the broadcast, one as host, one as contributing analyst. For Etienne, the milestone carries the weight of a full circle moment. It's incredibly humbling. It still gives me chills through my body because I remember being a young politico coming to D.C. and obsessing over Meet the Press, she says. I never anticipated working for presidents or a speaker or impeaching a president. And now I'm on the most iconic political show in American history. Her seat at that table was decades in the making. Etienne, CEO of Etienne and Saint, a communications, marketing, and digital strategy firm, has worked with Presidents Barack Obama and Joe Biden and been a trusted advisor as communications director for Vice President Kamala Harris and Speaker Nancy Pelosi. For more than 15 years, she has executed high-stakes communication strategies on issues ranging from national security to domestic policy. As communications director for Vice President Harris, she directed the team that secured Time Magazine's Person of the Year cover. During the impeachment and trial of President Trump, she led communications, legal, and legislative strategy for Speaker Pelosi, running the Operation Vanity Fair, would later memorialize by crowning her the Queen of the War Room. She describes that impeachment work as the culmination of everything I had done. When I look back on my career, everything was preparing me for that moment. Yet, when the Queen of the War Room title came about, her first instinct was not to celebrate it. When I first read it, I was embarrassed, and it kind of still makes me a little embarrassed, but I earned it, she said. And there is a photo here of Etienne walking next to Kamala Harris down a hall, possibly in the White House, black and white tile, down a hall with Secret Service all around her. And Kamala Harris appears to be listening quite attentively to whatever Etienne is saying. The article continues. That tension between the magnitude of her accomplishments and her comfort claiming them publicly, sits at the center of this new chapter. After years of building power for some of the most prominent figures in American politics, Etienne is now front and center on camera. Part of my challenge is I've transitioned from out of the shadows of these really big figures to stepping into my own light. I have to embrace that power, she says. The significance of her arrival extends well beyond her own career. It's the only show where you have two black women at that table, her leading it and me being part of it, Etienne says of herself and Welker. And what I think it speaks to is the fact that we're ready. It's our moment. The timing makes the image all the more striking. Both of us are in these positions at the moment in which black women are under severe attack in a way that we've never been seen before in our lifetime. She says. To me, it's a powerful statement to have both of us at that table. Etienne wasted no time putting that platform to use. In her debut, she helped open a broader conversation about the DNC autopsy report, pressing on when it would be released, and what it still needs to answer. Her position is ambiguous, given what is at stake and what has already been lost politically and economically. Black voters are owed transparency around how the money was spent, who benefited, and what Democrats intend to change moving forward. Black voters in particular need to become more transactional, she says, citing her former boss, Vice President Kamala Harris. It's the kind of accountability she believes Sunday morning political television has lacked, in part because the people most affected have rarely had a voice in those conversations. Etienne sees her role as a chance to change that, bringing long-ignored perspectives into a much larger political conversation. The conviction is not new. It has anchored her at every stage of her career, through every room she fought her way into. I understand that I was in those rooms for a reason, that God opened those doors to me, and because of that, I had an obligation to weather the storm, she says. Now, those rooms include millions of living rooms on Sunday mornings, and Etienne is clear about what her visibility signals to black women across the country. No one can carry and deliver on that burden like black women. We are the strongest people on earth, the most resilient people on earth, the most loving and caring and compassionate people on earth, she says. That's why I think it's important in this moment, because it affirms the notion that, again, we can do anything and that we've got this power in our gut to handle any situation, any war room. After a career spent crafting a message for others, Ashley Etienne is finally delivering her own. It's coming into my own power and realizing that anything is possible with effort, she says, and with God. On Sunday mornings, from one of the most influential tables in American media, that power is now on full display. All right, then we'll move on to another article. This one called Reverend Dr. Bernice King is calling us to action to protect black voting rights. As renewed attacks on voting rights sweep the South, King talks to Essence about returning to Selma, the long game of organizing, and why she still has hope. By Elizabeth Aula. On Saturday, May 16, 2026, the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, once again became the site of a fight for black voting rights. Decades after marches that helped secure these privileges for black Americans, activists and advocates showed up to protest recent redistricting efforts by Southern Republican state legislatures. The mobilization, organized under All Roads Lead to the South, is challenging the April 2026 U.S. Supreme Court ruling in Louisiana versus Calais. The new ruling is detrimental, considering it poses a threat to majority black voting districts across the South by undermining minority representation. While organizers called it a national day of action, the movement kickstarted a summer of organizing through mobilization, civic education, legal advocacy, and direct action. The goal is to ensure our voting rights are protected before election time. Reverend Dr. Bernice A. King, CEO of the King Center and daughter of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Coretta Scott King, understands our current plight intimately. Consequently, the 63-year-old returned to the very grounds where her parents ignited change and led protest efforts, which is symbolic in myriad ways. Essence sat down with King to discuss what it means to return to Selma and Montgomery under circumstances that may feel painfully familiar, at a time when voting rights are once again under scrutiny across the South. She is encouraging communities to move beyond news cycles and toward sustained strategic organizing. King shares why this moment may be more dangerous than people realize, how organizers can sustain the movement for the long term, and opens up about where she finds hope. Essence. What does it mean to you personally to return to Montgomery and Selma, the same ground your parents and so many of the ancestors walked and sacrificed on? Reverend Dr. Bernice King. Well, you know, in some ways it's sad. I'm disappointed to have to come back for a similar reason. And the reason I say similar is because we're in a different position than we were. They were fighting to make sure that we could register without being attacked and beaten and having all of these different barriers to grandfather clauses and things of that nature, poll taxes. But we come back in a different way. We have a greater political strength, even though there's an attempt to undermine that. So on the one hand, while I'm sad, I'm not shocked, because my mother always said struggle is a never-ending process. Freedom is never really won. You earn it and you win it in every generation, signaling that evil forces, people who always want to undermine and oppress and exploit, are going to be out there. We have to be vigilant about not just organizing, but staying organized, staying connected, staying coordinated. And so I'm encouraged by being here today to see a new generation stand in strength and power and truth, and with a determination to make this not just a moment in Montgomery, but to really move forward from here together. I've been in some meetings, and so I'm encouraged. I'm praying through this time that we understand how critically important it is for us not to demobilize and then try to mobilize again. We really create a strong infrastructure through this process. We're seeing renewed attacks on voting rights across the South. Can you speak to the seriousness of this threat and what is at stake if we don't respond? Well, if we don't respond, the people who did it will feel like they can keep doing it. And so you always have to shine a light on darkness, kind of like when you walk into a room and it's dark and the roaches start scattering in the light because they've been up to no good in your room or your kitchen. Our vigilance is important in this hour. And if we don't show up in this election, then it's going to be super tough going forward. We already saw the number of Black women who lost work from corporate America in the hundreds of thousands. We've seen what happened with SNAP benefits. We've seen what is happening under the banner of DEI. But the interesting thing is when people come against us, there's something in our DNA that gets resolved to find a way to fight and a strength and finds a way through it, through and out. And so if we are passive in this moment, or if we don't show up in votes, then what's happening now is going to quadruple, because the intent is to take us not just back to Jim Crow, but before Jim Crow. And so, especially for the next generation, this is a serious moment. This is nothing to play around with, and we ought to know it. People have said it, but we have to keep saying it to people. Nobody would be doing this, trying to redraw lines in the middle of a primary, if your vote wasn't important, if your vote didn't make a difference. They believe that if we don't vote, they are going to be able to place more people in there so that they can continue to do what they're doing, to attack. So we got to vote. We've got to talk to our friends about voting, educating ourselves on the vote, so we know what we're voting for, who we're voting for. How do you keep people committed for a long game effort in a world that is presently built for short attention spans? I'm Christian. I'm a preacher. There's a verse in the Bible that says, without a vision, the people will perish. There's another part that says, they cast off restraints. People need a vision. They need to be able to see what they're trying to do. They need an ultimate goal. And if we don't articulate that for people, and if we don't educate people and rally them around that, then their attention span will go on to the next thing. It has to be a vision that's compelling, a vision that they can buy into. That connects what's happening in their lives and the world. And then you put all the resources around that and make sure everybody has an assignment. Everybody has to have an assignment because a mouthpiece is not enough. That boycott in Montgomery couldn't have happened if women had not organized in that community to pass out flyers because the word had to get out. Now you think the spokesperson is important, but you can be there in an empty crowd, or you can be the one in an effort, and only a few people will rally around it and support it. There's a role for everybody, but we have to give them a vision that's bigger than that moment. And I think that's what's missing now. And then have goals related to that so that we can say, okay, this is the big picture. These are the goals. We've done that. But now we've got to keep moving with this, 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 and this. What gives you hope now? What gives me hope is that people keep showing up for every generation. What gives me hope is that I know in my DNA, the people who fought before, they overcame. And so we too will have something to draw from. I think about Harriet Tubman all the time because Harriet Tubman didn't have a navigational system, but somehow she got the freedom a long way away because she was tuned into God. More importantly, she followed the divine navigational system. And so if she did that, there's so much in us. So that gives me hope. And I have hope because I hear for the first time white people in numbers saying things in a very strong voice in support of our community. I've been on social media, and we don't need to sleep on that. Now, you might say, well, where were they 5 years ago or 4 years ago or last year? Whatever. Never mind that, because you don't want to dismiss those who may have been voicing themselves, but it may not have gotten out. But we have people who understand and connect to us as a people who know who we are, part of the human family. They are speaking up for their people. That gives me hope, too. All right. Okay, this next article is called Stargazing. Black Excellence Showed Out for the Obama Presidential Center Grand Opening. From Jennifer Hudson to Common to Stevie Wonder, Chicago Southside was electric as history was made on Juneteenth Eve. This article by Shelby Stewart, and again, this is from Essence.com. Chicago's Southside made history today, and the whole world was watching. The grand opening of the Barack Obama Presidential Center drew one of the most extraordinary gatherings of celebrities, dignitaries, and former presidents the city has ever seen. A who's who of former presidents, dignitaries, and musical performers descended on an invite-only dedication ceremony nearly a decade in the making. Former President Barack Obama and Michelle Obama were joined by former Presidents Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Joe Biden for the milestone occasion. Every living president and first lady, except Donald and Melania Trump, was in attendance. A pointed statement in its own right. Oprah Winfrey, Tom Hanks, Steven Spielberg, David Letterman, and Conan O'Brien were also on hand, joined by Malia and Sasha Obama, who watched their father's emotional remarks from the crowd. The performances were nothing short of staggering. Bruce Springsteen, U2's Bono, and The Edge, Christina Aguilera, Common, Jennifer Hudson, John Legend, Mark Anthony, Stevie Wonder, Thames, and The Roots all took the stage, turning the dedication into something closer to a once-in-a-generation concert event. Eddie Vedder performed with Guitars Over Guns, and John Legend and Common delivered a performance of Glory that brought the crowd to its feet. The 19-acre, $850 million campus includes a museum featuring digital exhibitions on key moments in Obama's presidency, a basketball court, and a branch of the city's public library. It opens to the general public on Juneteenth, Friday, a date that felt anything but accidental. And there are quite a few photos from the event. Let's see, there is former President Barack Obama. Former U.S. President Barack Obama speaks during opening day of the Barack Obama Presidential Center in Chicago, Illinois, June 18, 2026. And there is a photo of former First Lady Michelle Obama speaking at that event. Thames singing. She's got a microphone in one hand, drums all around her, and she's wearing this long red gown, just looking stunning as she's singing. John Legend sitting at his Yamaha piano singing in a white suit with black pinstripes. And let's see, Common, who has a fist raised in the air. He's wearing a nice green suit and singing there. You can see John Legend in the background there. And Tyler Perry also at that event. John Batiste showed up. There's a photo of him there. And Oprah Winfrey. Looks like she's got quite the crowd around her. Former VP Kamala Harris and former second gentleman Doug Emhoff. They are waving as they're walking in. And former President George W. Bush and former First Lady Michelle Obama. Looks like Bush has his arm around Michelle Obama and standing off kind of in the background, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama stepping aside for that photo op. And then there's a photo of the former First Ladies. We've got Jill Biden, Michelle Obama, Laura Bush and Hillary Clinton all together in that photo. And then looks like Jennifer Hudson, who is, she looks like she is just singing her heart out on stage with a big group, like a chorus behind her there. Reverend Al Sharpton walking into the building. LL Cool J, let's see. Former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, U.S. Rep. Robin Kelly, and House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Addison Bellum, Gayle King, and Oprah Winfrey. There are a lot of... Oh, Stevie Wonder. There's so many folks here showing up for this event. So quite the event that was this this past Friday on Juneteenth, or just the day before Juneteenth for that opening. And we'll try to fit in one more article here. Beauty brand founders on what Juneteenth means to them. In honor of Juneteenth, your favorite beauty brand founders reflect on the beloved holiday. Juneteenth is a day for us to commemorate Black freedom in honor of our and honor our ancestors. Since June 19, 1865, when it was declared that enslaved people in Galveston Bay, Texas, were free, we've become college graduates, CEOs, innovators, and entrepreneurs. Additionally, we've dominated hair salons, nail shops, beauty lines, and more. And in honor of Juneteenth, below, a few beauty brand founders reflect on what the important day means to them. Mary Imeve Bohr, founder of The Weave. Growing up as first-generation American from Nigeria, I've had to navigate infusing American culture with my own, says Imeve Bohr. One of the ways Imeve Bohr did this was by creating a business of her own hair brand, The Weave. She provides luxurious synthetic and human hair to make wigs and other styles. Although Juneteenth wasn't a holiday, Imeve Bohr and her family typically celebrated growing up, she's found meaning in it on her own, expressing her own sense of freedom through her hair. Juneteenth marks a day that allows for our collective freedom, and as I am building and creating a company, an experience that centers our beauty, it's something I will never forget, says Imev Bor. For her, creation is a fundamental form of healing through a problematic history and today's trying times. Imev Bor encourages us. We are at a tough time culturally, as we are seeing so many elements of Black culture and creativity infused in mainstream media and entertainment, while Black Americans are still fighting for fundamental rights. My words of motivation center on resilience. We have to keep creating and moving through all of the roadblocks as our ancestors have faced. Niakio Grieco, the co-founder of 13 Loon. 13 Loon is an e-commerce one-stop shop for discovering beauty brands by Black and Brown founders. Their mission is to reframe how brands of color are received in hopes that they can continue to take up space in the industry. And let's see what she has posted. Every year since 1963, U.S. presidents have issued a Small Business Week proclamation to recognize the contribution of entrepreneurs and small business owners. The theme of Small Business Week 2024, which runs from April 28th to May 4th, is Building on the Small Business Boom. Busy founders like myself were operating during Small Business Week, but I could not be more thrilled to celebrate all just doing the dang thing. Keep your head up, find your true north, and never, ever give up. The life of an entrepreneur is not for the faint of heart. The hustle is real. Stay the course. Align your passion and purpose. The reward is our ancestors' greatest dream. Proud of you. Proud of us. Hashtag the beauty of inclusion. Happy belated. Hashtag Small Business Week. Niaki Grieco, the co-founder of 13th Loon, keeps this mission in mind as she gears up for Juneteenth. Grieco tells us it's a day to reflect on our community's resilience. On this day, I'd like to focus on our work at 13 Loon in building a more inclusive and equitable beauty landscape. Winning Newcomer of the Year in 2021, Grieco and her team know exactly what it's like to push forward in an industry that isn't always accepting. Juneteenth reminds me that none of us are free until all of us are free. Equity is paramount to progress. This is at the heart of everything I do, personally and professionally. And we've run out of time for today's Essence. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Tara, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.